Remember Brooke Shields in those Calvin Klein TV ads?
You want to know what comes between me and my Calvins? Nothing.
And Calvin Klein isn't the only company that tries to convince us to buy stuff with sexual imagery. But guess what? According to new research initiated by my guest this hour, sex doesn't sell. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 8 on this Monday, November the 10th. We will talk this hour about why we buy what we buy, and we will welcome your questions for our guest, Martin Lindstrom, one of the world's most respected marketing experts. He advises executives of many companies, including McDonald's Corporation, Procter & Gamble, Nestle, and Microsoft, and he is the author of the book, Buyology. B-U-Y-O-L-O-G-Y, Buyology, Truth and Lies About Why We Buy. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being here. This was really interesting stuff. Now, you, along with Oxford University researchers, conducted what is being called the largest neuromarketing study ever conducted. What is neuromarketing and what was this study?
Well, neuromarketing is a very controversial marriage between marketing and science. So in principle, instead of asking consumers questions, we are scanning their brain using fMRI, which is probably one of the most sophisticated brain scanning technologies in the world, basically to understand what's going on in our subconscious mind. Because what we learned is the majority of everything we do when we walk down the supermarket aisle and pick down a can of Skippies is taking place in our subconscious mind. About 85% is taking place there. And that's exactly what we wanted to find out, what's going on in our brain.
We're going to see if we can, Martin Lindstrom, get a little better telephone connection with you, because since I'm having difficulty hearing every word you're saying, I suspect our listeners are too. So let's try to reestablish contact with Martin Lindstrom, because you're going to want to hear what he has to say. The results of this neuromarketing study are really fascinating and somewhat surprising. As I mentioned, one of the findings, sex doesn't sell. Does that surprise you? Many others, figuring out why we buy what we buy. And it's not just consumer products. It was very interesting to note that, you know, those warning labels on cigarette packs that say, you know, smoking may be hazardous to your health. In Europe, they're even stronger. They say smoking kills. Those warnings are having the opposite effect, according to this research. Instead of discouraging people from smoking, they're actually encouraging people to smoke. How could that be? So we will, again, welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Are you a Coke or Pepsi drinker? Do you have any idea why that is? Do you have any idea why when you walk down, say, the aisle of cosmetics or products for babies, that you'll grab baby powder, Johnson & Johnson baby powder? Well, our guest will tell us that it has something to do with our sense of smell, that the actual nostalgia, the smell, is it's what's causing us to buy certain products. That sometimes sounds and smell are more important than the actual sight of something. Oh, good. I guess we have reestablished contact with our guest. Martin Lindstrom is with us. He is author of Buyology, Truth and Lies About What We Buy. And as we were reestablishing contact with you, Martin Lindstrom, I was talking about some of the surprising and some of the fascinating results from this study that you conducted. What you did is you scanned the brains of some 2,000 consumers, and you did what was called an fMRI. That's a functional MRI?
That's right, yes, and I hope you can hear me well
much
now.
Much better, much better, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, what we decided to do was to scan consumers' brains, because we've learned that it's incredibly hard to ask people questions and really get a truthful answer. It is not because consumers are lying in any way, but because quite often as consumers, we really don't know. And I want to do a little test on you, if you're okay with that.
I'll try.
Do you knock on wood?
Not all the time, but I have. I've been known to say knock on wood and then knock on something even if it's not wood. Yeah.
So why do you do that?
Because I guess it's something that, you know, you heard over the years, and it's a superstition, I guess.
You see, that's the problem we have here now. Normally, no, you would be able to come with a rational, very clever answer, but knock on wood, why do we actually do that? We just do it. And a lot of the things we do every second is actually taking place in our subconscious mind. And we really can't explain why we're doing it. And that's the reason why we decided to scan consumers' brains, because that actually helped us to understand what really goes on when we're buying brands and making decisions every day.
Yeah, so you would see something light up in someone's brain, and that would tell you, ah, that's why that person likes this product.
Well, you know, not necessarily that sort of black and white, but yeah, in a very sort of simplistic explanation, yes, you are right. In fact, what we decided to do was to involve 20 different scientists in order to make this study as accurate as possible, because you have to remember, we really don't know everything about our brains today. In fact, if I should compare this with anything, when Columbus was discovering America in 1492, he actually drew up a map of the world. And if you take a look at that map today, it looks a little bit like a joke. You can still recognize it, the world, but there's a lot of different things which are wrong. And in fact, the accuracy of the brain, how much we know about the brain today, is somewhat similar to the map Columbus was drawing up. So there's a lot of things we don't know things about today, and which still is work in progress. So what we're discovering right now is basically the very first step out of a long journey, which will take many years for us to really find out what the total truth about everything is when it comes to our brain.
But one of the findings that talk about in the book is that sex doesn't necessarily sell. We all thought that that's why, you know, we saw Brooke Shields on those commercials, and why to this day we're seeing, you know, a beautiful women scantily clad trying to sell beer to whatever else.
Yeah, I'm sorry to tell you that, but you're absolutely right. Sex does not sell. What actually happens is that sex is so dramatic in our brain that actually that's the only thing we can think of. You have to remember the reason why we are placed on this planet is to reproduce each other, and that means that is our main driver in our brains. So what's interesting is when you see a pair of Calvin Klein or you see Paris Hilton doing an ad for a burger chain, we totally forget the brain, or we totally forget the brand, and we totally remember the sex bit. And so what we really do remember, if we remember anything, it is the controversial stuff around it. It is the controversy which are selling brands, and some brands have been really good at doing that. I remember when Abercrombie and Fitch was releasing the new holiday season catalog, it was so dramatically received that, in fact, it was sold on eBay later on for more than $100. That created the controversy which were needed to generate traffic into the shops. But in most cases, people like me, like, for example, Paris Hilton, I totally forget what the burger brand was all about, and I remember Paris Hilton.
Yeah, so it's the controversy surrounding an ad campaign that's then maybe the brand is remembered,
exactly.
but not it just because there's a beautiful woman selling the brand. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I had heard in the news the other day a story that said that warning labels on cigarette packages that say smoking may be hazardous to your health here in the States, but in Europe, smoking will kill you, forceful warnings, are not discouraging people from smoking, but indeed might be encouraging people to smoke. And I thought, where did they find that out? And I find out it's from you.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, no, here's the fact. I was surprised about that there's today, people actually smoke much more than they did some years ago. In fact, a smoker is smoking 13% more over the last 3 years. And I just don't understand why, because we know that smoking is not healthy. We can't smoke indoor anymore. And, you know, you're not allowed as a tobacco company to advertise at all. It's been banned in the United States for several years. So how come we smoke more? And that's exactly what we wanted to look into. So we took the health warnings on the cigarette packs, you know, the Surgeon General's. We also took the health warnings from Europe, as you referred back to, which are really dramatic. It's almost half the front of a cigarette pack, which is plastered with those major warnings. And then we also took warnings from Australia and from Canada, which are really graphic. You know, we're seeing illustrations of lungs and hearts and stuff like that, really nasty stuff. We then scanned consumers, and what we realized was really interesting. We actually realized when people are looking at those health warnings, in fact, they're not sort of, you know, kicked away and they don't feel disencouraged from smoking. In fact, the total opposite is happening. When they see a health warning, they are encouraged to smoke even more. In fact, they feel an urge to lit up a cigarette and puff away. And here we have governments around the world spending billions of dollars every year plastering those health warnings on cigarette packs, and in fact, they have the total opposite effect.
And we don't. Do you understand why? I mean, we know it's happening, but do you understand why?
We have some theories around it, and one of my theories is very simple. I'm not sure if you remember the Pavlov's effect. The Pavlov's effect, where you had these scientists which were ringing a bell. And every time he rang the bell, the dogs were arriving, and he gave them some food.
Sure.
And the 10th time they arrived, he was still ringing the bell, but this time he did not give them any food. Still, they're very hungry. That is the Pavlov's effect. And in principle, we are talking about the Pavlov's effect. Remember, as a smoker, you look at the Surgeon General's warning on the cigarette pack, and you really don't read it anymore because you've seen it so many times. So you just look at it. It's a piece of graphics. And that piece of graphics means that in 10 or 12 seconds later, you're going to lit up your cigarette and you're going to feel wonderful because you're going to feel this rush of nicotine in your brain. So what happens is that graphic suddenly is linked together with feeling good. And guess what happens? The brain, which is incredibly intelligent, starts to link those two things together. And the result is that every time you see a health warning, you feel good. In particular, because you look at the health warning as being objective. It's placed by the government. You trust the message. So your critical guard goes down. You're actually open to the message. And that's the reason why the health warnings are probably one of the most powerful advertising tools for the tobacco industry.
We're talking with Martin Lindstrom. He is author of Biology, Truth and Lies About Why We Buy. We are answering your questions about why you buy what you buy based on this new research that was initiated by our guest. Martin Lindstrom is one of the world's most respected marketing experts. He advises executives of many companies, including McDonald's, Procter & Gamble, Nestle, Microsoft, and many, many more. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number for your questions or reactions, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you. Kathleen Dunn and her guest will recap the political headlines from around the nation and around the world. It's all things political coming up after 9 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about why we buy with Martin Lindstrom, who is the author of Biology, Truth and Lies About Why We Buy. And Martin Lindstrom, this isn't just about consumer products. Your research also applies to things like political advertising, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. We decided to look into the tricks the politicians are using in order to persuade us to cast a vote on them. What's so fascinating is that fear has shown to be the prominent factor in order to capture a vote. We actually did a research study where we looked into Johnson, President Johnson's trick when he was securing a lot of voters when he was running the Daisy TV commercial. Do you remember the Daisy TV commercial?
Yeah, I didn't see it real time, but I have seen it since. Yeah,
yeah. It's a nasty television commercial where a little girl is picking the leaves on a daisy and it counts down to an A-bomb exploding. Now, that commercial was used in a scanning session, again, where we're using fMRI, and then we did exactly the same scan on a 2004 TV campaign from President W. Bush, where we saw wolves entering the borders, and the whole headline was that the terrorists are entering our country. Now, what was so interesting was that exactly the same areas in the brain was activated, the amygdala, which is also an area somewhat responsible for fear. And what we learned was that even though both of the ads were either from the Republicans or Democrats, in fact, they both played on fear in a very powerful way, so much so that this most likely was the reason why they were winning the election that particular year. So we do see today that politicians are using fear a lot. And actually, we did even see it in this recent election, where fear was pretty prominent, in particular fear about our financial situation and the future of the country.
We do have some callers, so let me go to the phones and invite you, if you have a question about advertising and marketing and why advertisers do what they do and how it influences us, why we buy what we buy, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think you're immune? Maybe you want to think again. Daniel in Rice Lake, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Shoppers seem to act like addicts. Are endorphins morphine-like chemicals released in the buyer's brain when shoppers score?
Oh, what do you mean when shoppers score?
When they score a big one or a good deal and get excited.
Well, Daniel, you're actually absolutely right. What happens in the brain is that we actually are addicted to a chemical called dopamine. And in fact, if you are a drug addict or if you are addicted to alcohol or drugs or whatever it is, you actually are releasing the same chemical in the brain. What's so scary is that some people actually become extreme. In this country, we have 17 million shopaholics. And a shopaholic is actually a person which are buying more than 400 shoes throughout life. So it really is a serious problem. Now, what happens is that if you get a really good deal, then you actually are reacting as if you are on drugs. And I want to give you an interesting example, which I think you'll laugh about. We actually did an experiment recently where we're placing cans of soups in the supermarket. And there was a huge pile of those soups, and it was priced at $1.99. And no one bought anything. Then the day after, we're adding a little footmark next to the price, and the note was saying maximum 8 cans per customer. And guess what? Everyone was grabbing the soups and were running out of the supermarket. And when we later on did a test, we realized that people were hunting. It was like we wanted to make sure we got the soup before it disappeared. And that actually activated a reward center in the brain, which meant that we were hardwired to do this. In fact, you're right. We became addicted to dopamine, and this was the way for us to secure it as quick as possible.
And we were influenced by that because there was a limited number of these available. They must be valuable.
That's right. You know, the trick quite often is to put a limited number on it. Just remember when Steve Jobs, the CEO and founder, was releasing the iPhone. There was a huge line in front of the Apple iStore, and people were waiting for hours and hours to secure the phone before everyone else. Now, the interesting thing was it really never really sold out, but people still wanted to be first, to secure that got the iPhone in time, and that's exactly the trick used. It's a trick used when Harry Potter is releasing the book, you know, 1 minute past midnight. Those tricks are basically tricks by the retailers to basically plug into our very old, old part of the brain where we feel, wow, if I don't get it now, I'll never get it. But guess what? In most cases, if not all, you will get it.
Yeah. Thank you, Daniel, for the call. You know, I thought that this was outlawed. You talk about subliminal advertising in the book. I thought that that was supposed to be banned, that secret images couldn't be somehow hidden in an ad or a product to make us want to buy it.
So did I, and I was so intrigued by a research study which was conducted in 1956 where a gentleman was placing a 1/3,000 second of a flash of a Coca-Cola bottle and a bag of popcorn in the cinema movies.
Mm-hmm.
And people supposedly were rushing to the counter and buying all those popcorns and Cokes. And later on, by the way, he admitted it was just a hoax. It was just fake. but it was banned across the world. Now, I wanted to find out, is this the truth? Does it really work or not? So we set up an experiment where we basically were scanning consumers' brains as they're exposed for subliminal messages. And one of those photos we picked was a photo of a Ferrari car, you know, those classic red Ferrari cars.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that car is used in a major racer show used in Europe called Formula One. It's somewhat similar to NASCAR race here in the U.S. And that show has been sponsored by Philip Morris and by Marlboro for many years. Now, you know, cigarette smoking and Formula One is not allowed to be connected anymore. In fact, you cannot sponsor it, but we just wanted to take that photo without any logos from anything, just the car. And guess what happened? As we measured the brain and we looked into the craving spot in the brain, it lit up like a fireball. In fact, people, you know, saw this photo without being able to express it as one of the most encouraging photos ever to make us want to smoke even more. And it was just an ordinary photo of a car. And that's really where we realized that today the tobacco company is using subliminal photos, not only, you know, in the racer shows and just everywhere, they also use it in bathrooms. In fact, if you go to UK, you'll notice that they have small innocent tiles in the bathrooms, which are not showing any logos, not showing any cigarettes, but those tiles have been sponsored by the tobacco industry in order to make us smoke more. Does it work? You bet it does. This is the trick for the tobacco industry to make us smoke even more.
Are any other industries using that technique?
Well, you know, a lot of industries are using it probably not as dramatically as the tobacco industry, because you have to remember the tobacco industry had one benefit, and it sounds very strange when I tell you this, but the biggest strength of theirs is the tobacco advertising was banned some 20 years ago. So they were forced to find other avenues, which is the reason why they're so advanced. But if you take a look at Tiffany's, remember the jewelry company?
Sure.
Do you remember the ruby blue colored box?
Robin's eggs, that color blue?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And do you know what? Women's heartbeat rate goes up 22% when they just see that box.
So just the color sets us off.
It is the color. In fact, we did not check the heartbeat rate of men when they're receiving the credit card bill. I'm sure that's another story. But what's so fascinating about this is it's just the color doing the work. Or if you just take these white earplugs, which are used from an iPod, most people are today aware of white earplugs means basically an iPod. Or then we did another experiment. We actually created our own fake movie. We were taking one of the scenes where a man and a woman was hugging each other, and in the background we placed the shadow or the silhouette, in fact, from a McDonald's drive-in roof. There's no logos around, no reference to McDonald's, just the shadow or the silhouette. And what happened was the people suddenly started to be hungry, and they could not explain why, just because they saw the silhouette of a McDonald's roof. So you could say that subliminal advertising, either consciously or unconsciously, are used by companies, and it will be used more and more in the future because we can now see that the future of the logo is a little bit sort of going down the hill, because when people are seeing a logo, they actually put up a warning sign and saying, hey, that company is trying to buy me something, and they're trying to sell me something. But if there's no logo, and if I make up my own mind, I think, then it's much more powerful.
Well, you know, I'm trying to think of, a lot of these experiments that you're telling us about and the results of why we buy what we buy. There's not a whole lot we can do to be savvy about this. I mean, if this is going to be done sort of, you know, on the sly.
Well, yeah, there is actually, besides reading my book, of course, because I decided to write the book to warn consumers about it, because I think we as consumers really need to be aware of what's going on out there. But let me just give you some tricks I've learned. First of all, when you go out shopping, you may have noticed that the basket, the shopping basket you're using, is actually starting to get bigger and bigger. In fact, what has happened over the last 5 years is that this basket size has doubled. Now, what we've actually learned is that if a basket is double the size, you, as a consumer, is more likely to buy 30% more products. So my first advice to you is either grab the small basket all. Don't take a basket at all. Hold mm-hmm. everything in your hands, and you'll notice that, in fact, you're not going to buy as much. The second advice I will give you is that make sure you do not go out and buy stuff if you are hungry. Wait till you know that you are likely to buy much more if you're hungry. So eat before you go out and buy some stuff.
Yeah.
And then I'll also say to you, make sure you disrupt your path through the supermarket. And it's just a little trick you should try tomorrow when you're going out shopping. Now, we are a victim of habits, and we tend to walk into the same supermarket. We tend to follow the same path throughout the supermarket aisles. Do not do that. Change your path. And what happens is that your brain suddenly starts to discover that, in fact, quite often, you're just driven by habits. You're buying a brand because it's easy, not because it's the cheapest. And if you change your path throughout the supermarket, you actually start to use your brain more and therefore question more what you're buying. And quite often, you'll save a lot of money. So that's some of the advice you should use before you go out and spending your money, your hard-earned money.
Thanks for that. Let's take another call. Natalie in Madison. Hi, Natalie.
Hi there. I want to get your guest to weigh in about the kiosks that are at malls. Often I'm walking in the middle of the mall and not interested in what they're selling, and they're very aggressive in terms of being predatory and kind of approaching me, and if I have to double back, they approach me again. And has that been shown to be an effective tool? They'll say something leading like, can I ask you a question? Or something.
Or can I put this lotion on your hand?
Right, yeah. And their product is extended, and I don't want to be sprayed with cologne or lotion or whatever the product is. I would like to get your guest to weigh in on that, please.
Yes, it is powerful. And the reason why it's powerful is because when you walk down the supermarket aisles or you walk down the mall or whatever happens, you actually are driven by your subconscious mind. You see, when we drive a car, when we walk, we really don't think about our movements. We are basically running on autopilot. And for us to be disconnected from this autopilot needs some disruption. So when they're attacking you, asking you a question, you are moving from your subconscious mind to your conscious mind. And remember, only 15% of your brain capacity takes place in your conscious mind. And that is really the trick, because if you are not in your conscious mind, you will not really start to act. And if they, for example, spray a smell on you, we actually know that 75% of everything you smell every day is actually affecting your emotions. That means that the sense of smell is one of the most powerful senses in order to seduce you to buy more, and then followed by sound. So if they talk to you and if they use a smell, you are most likely at that stage on alert. You start to think and you start to be attentive to what they're saying, and that is where you start to be very vulnerable. So this is a trick which has been used by retailers for a long time. And I remember when I was in Las Vegas recently, walking down the strip, you know, a lot of people are standing with small business cards in their hand, flicking them in front of you to create attention. And it's that little flick of movement which are creating attention and which suddenly grabs you. And because we're very polite people, we don't want to say no. So guess what? We're now hooked into a journey of buying more.
Yeah. In fact, I saw you on the Today Show in an interview talking about the power of smell when it came to a product like baby powder. And it's the smell brings on nostalgia, that it's sort of a comfort smell.
That's right. In fact, what we learned was that the smell in baby powder, which is vanilla, is exactly the same smell, or there's a twist of that smell, when women are giving birth to newborn babies and their milk is basically containing that particular smell. And that's the reason why vanilla in our society is so popular. That's the reason why Play-Doh, do you remember the smell of Play-Doh?
Kind of.
That's wonderful smell. In fact, it quite often brings people straight back to when they're 5 or 6 years of age. I was doing a very interesting speech in New York City recently, and I took that the little can of Play-Doh and put it in front of the nose of a high-level CEO, and suddenly he started to cry. And I said to him, why are you crying? And he said, because that smell reminded him about all the punishment his teacher was giving him every time he was playing with Play-Doh. So smell really captures a moment in our life. It takes us straight back to when we were smelling it for the first time. The same, by the way, is the case with sound. And that's the reason why marketeers now are starting to embed smells and sounds and a tactile sensation into brands in order to seduce us into another world.
I saw, is it true that there's an airline that actually has a brand smell?
That's right. The airline company is called Singapore Airlines, and it's an Asian company, and they actually, more than 12 years ago, developed their own patented smell. And it's a smell which is, at one hand, both exotic, it's feminine, and it's very Asian. And that smell is sprayed into the cabin when people are handed out those hot towels. And what's amazing is when we did a study in the biology project, we learned that 92% of consumers, when they smell that smell, is taking straight back to the emotions they have when they fly Singapore Airlines. And these guys have gone even further. They actually are so controlled that even the makeup those Asian girls are wearing is actually part of the brand manual. In fact, they're so controlled that the size of the uniform, which, by the way, is only one size, if they are larger than that size, they will be grounded and have to go through a special training school to fit into that particular uniform because they say that's part of the brand. So sometimes airline companies can go very, very far. And it may be the reason why Singapore Airlines today is voted as one of the best airline companies in the world. However, I would say I would hate to work for them because that would be pretty strict.
I bet. We're talking about what advertisers and marketers do to make us buy the things we buy, how they try to influence us, and why we do buy the things we buy. Our guest helped initiate research where some 2,000 people had their brains scanned in an MRI-like device where he could find out what works and what doesn't when it comes to advertising and marketing. We're talking about the results of that research and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Martin Lindstrom is the author of Biology, Truth and Lies About What We Buy. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn and her guest will talk all things political. That's coming up after 9. We're talking about why we buy what we buy. Our guest is the author of Biology, Truth and Lies About What We Buy, Michael Lindstrom. One of the things, one of the things that you found out was that product placement in terms of seeing a Coke can in a movie or a TV show, that doesn't prompt us to want a Coke.
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, in the case of American Idol, the answer was very simple. Coke is actually doing a pretty good job at promoting their brand. So is AT&T, but we were very, very surprised when we learned that Ford, in fact, has the opposite effect. What we learned about product placement is that it has to be part of the storyline. And if it's not part of the storyline and it doesn't fit into the context, our brains simply delete the product placement. It actually deletes the brand in our brain. And that's exactly the reason why in the American Idol research study we did, we actually learned that Ford, what the heck does a Ford car have to do with a song contest, is what our brain is saying. And because of that, it decides to delete the brand in the brain. And you know, it makes sense. You know, recently, I was watching a movie from Sylvester Stallone called Driven. And in that movie, it had 103 product placements. That's the same as watching a product every minute. I should have received money from watching that movie, I think. You know, I can't remember one single. Did you watch the James Bond Casino Royale?
I did, in fact, but I don't remember any products necessarily.
You don't? So you don't remember Louis Vuitton or Federal Express? Because neither do I.
Yeah.
Because those brands are what we define as wallpaper. And the reason why it's wallpaper is because our brain wants to survive. We are exposed for 2 million television commercials throughout life. That's the same as watching 8 hours of television commercials 7 days a week for 6 years. And of course, our brain needs to survive. And it does that by basically creating a filter which is so thick that we only see the most relevant stuff around us.
Sounds good. Dave in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Very interesting show. When I worked at a grocery store, basically the companies would pay a little bit extra so that your product would be in the middle level aisles. I mean the trays. I mean, so they'd always be right around eye level. The ones right. that would pay the most. Did did your guests ever do a survey on if quote unquote the shelf space height ever played a difference in sales?
Yeah, product placement on a shelf, Martin.
It has an enormous effect, mm-hmm. so much so that the price for you to place a product on the high level on a shelf is almost double the price of placing it at the lower level. So you can be sure that most brands and products you're seeing at that level has paid a fortune to be there. But not only that, to have a food demonstration or to have your music played in the retail store or to have a special promotion, everything which is happening in that real estate, which is what we call it, is optimized down to the very last dollar because this is a battleground for brands to survive. And we do know today that we actually make our decision in only 4 seconds. 60% of all the brands you and I purchase every day in the supermarket is made in 4 seconds. And because that is the case, we really don't have brain capacity to think through all the pros and the cons before we mm-hmm. grab that product and put it down in our basket. And that's the reason why retailers and brand owners are spending enormous resources on analyzing where to place the brand, how to place it, and how to seduce us to buy even more.
So if we want to take a little bit more than 4 seconds, maybe we would look on the bottom aisle, the bottom shelf rather than just what's at
well,
eye level.
Exactly. No, mm-hmm. and change your path through the supermarket. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you just disrupt what you're normally doing. And here's another good advice to you. Now, one very, very interesting trick retailers are doing is to encourage you to bring your children with you out shopping.
Oh, because they want
because
everything.
We actually know mm-hmm. now that you are buying 40% more products if your children are with you. Guess why? Because you feel guilty.
Oh, yeah.
So you walk through the supermarket aisle, you not spend time with your kids for a whole week, you've been working hard to earn your money, and now you're together with little Peter, and he's screaming and shouting he wants to have that little PlayStation. And guess what? In the end of that shopping trip, he's going to get it because you feel so guilty. 40% more money is what you're spending when Peter is with you. So make sure he stays at home. I'm sure he will be just as happy, and you'll be able to afford going out buying more stuff to survive rather than just to have fun.
Severin in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I was wondering, in your survey did you see any gender differences? In other words, are men very different when they shop that woman, or are there any stimuli that are different or would trigger different responses across genders?
I wish I could tell you that it's men which basically are totally seduced. Unfortunately, it is the women which are the victim here. We do know that women are much more seduced in a retail environment. Why? Because women in general are much more emotional in the reaction and much more creative for that sake as well. But also, women are much more sensitive towards our senses. So when you, for example, smell a smell or hear a sound, as a woman, you're actually much more affected. And I want to tell you about a fascinating research study which I'm writing about in the book, which is about wine. In fact, a study was conducted where wine was put on sale in a retail store, French wine, Italian wine, and American wine. Mm-hmm. And then some subtle music was played in the background, first some Italian music, then they played some French music, and later on they played some American music. And guess what? The sales of Italian music, when the Italian music was played, and the sales of the Italian wine went up dramatically. In fact, when people were interviewed later on asking them, how come you bought all this Italian wine? They had no clue, but they said to us, well, I'm probably in an Italian mood somehow. So the music is affecting us a lot. And in fact, what we know is that women are more seduced. Probably if you should do a split between women, men and women, you will see it's 75% women and 25% men. Now, it's not everything which is in that case, but certainly when it comes to shopping, the main drivers are the women.
Interesting. And so the it's not just music that might be used in a, I don't know, a jingle for a TV or radio spot. It's just the music that can be played in a store.
Yes. And, you know, it's fascinating because, in fact, some retailers are not only playing ordinary music, they make sure they play music where the rhythm is lower than the heartbeat rate. You see, what happens is that the heartbeat rate and the rhythm is too high, people actually will rush and run out of the store too quickly because they feel stressed. That's the reason why some music is having a very low rhythm, and that very slow rhythm actually makes people stay longer in the store, and we know from statistics that you're then spending more money. And in fact, some other music played in restaurants actually make you eat even more, scary as it sounds. And then I have a very interesting experiment which was conducted in Germany recently. It was in a do-it-yourself store where the smell of freshly cut grass was sprayed into the store. And guess what happened? The customers thought that the staff and the intelligence level of the staff had increased with 49% because that smell just reminded them about those hard-working staff which knew everything about do-it-yourself.
So we thought the staff were smarter because we could smell fresh-mown grass?
That's right.
Huh.
Yeah. So when you smell something or when you hear something or when you just something happens which is not really ordinary, you can be pretty sure that that lovely freshly baked bread which is pumped in as you enter the store is not there just to make you feel cozy. It's there because we know that you're going to buy more.
Now I can blame it on the music and the smells.
Yes, exactly.
Rick in Fond du Lac, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I don't know if you guys discussed this or any of your research was looked at related to the Internet. I'm the vice president of a new startup company, and I'm actually later today I'll be putting the text into our website. And I wondered about the use of video or music or just auditory or any kind of sound related to website purchasing. Our product is not retail-based, but I just wondered if there's any research related to that that you've done on the Internet compared to just regular text, information-based.
You bet there is, and it's a very good question. In fact, we know today that if you are playing a sound, a branded sound on your website, you will remember that particular website up to 35% more. But let me just give you some very practical advice. First of all, it should not be like you visiting a nightclub, right? So don't plaster people with a lot of sound, which are just running and running and running. It should be a twist of a tune, just setting the stage and making you emotional. I remember a very well-known hotel chain, which is from Asia. They play a seven-second tune when you walk in there, and you just want to go to Asia when you listen to it. The second thing is, make sure you can cut the sound off. Consumers hate that they actually are walking into a website and they can't kill the sound. You should give everyone the option of stopping the sound. And third, I think it's really important when you work with sound that you use it across all your touch points. That means that sound is used on your phone system, on your on-hold music. It's used in your reception. It's used everywhere. And what's so interesting is that if you take the largest brands in the world, the 1,000 largest brands in the world, you'll notice that today less than 10% is actually using branded music on the website. So this is a trend which will really kick off very soon, and I can tell you it pays off in a major way.
Oh, terrific. Thank you.
Pleasure.
All right, thanks, Rick. And, too bad you can't put any smells on the Internet, huh?
I'm pretty blissful for that, I would say. Can you imagine?
Yeah, you know, I saw your website the other day, and I saw a bit on there where you talk about your business card and how you fold over the corner of your business card because that breaks the rules.
Yeah, that's right. You know, everyone comes to me and they say, hey, Martin, how do you develop, you know, a smart strategy for just your brand in a different and cheap way? And what I decided to do was to brand my business card in an unusual way. When people come up to me, quite often they want me to sign my book. And I realized people who really love my book, they fold a lot of corners, they do those dog ears. And I realized, hey, that's my brand. So today when you get my business card, it actually is pre-folded. And it has the word brands raised into the corner so you can actually feel it with your thumb. And what's interesting is that not only is it a great story, but also it makes you remember it because you touch it at the same time. And because I appeal to two senses and not one, we do know that you are likely to remember my card almost double as much. And not only that, I'm breaking a rule as well. So my advice to everyone is, if you have a small business at home, break rules and use the small tricks in order to create attention out there. And if you want to see how that business card looks like, go to my website and martinlindstrom.com, because there's a lot of good advice about how to break rules, because I think we need to do that today in order to survive, because budgets are not as big as the Coca-Colas of the world, mm-hmm. but you can still make a huge difference by thinking in a different way.
John in Cross Plains is with us. Hi, John.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest was familiar with Vance Packard's book. I think it was written in the 1950s.
That's
called
right.
The Hidden Persuaders.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In which he went into a lot of this information, but he didn't, of course, have the brain scans to support it. But suggested that there were a lot of subtle things done in advertising that we're unaware of that influence our buying habits.
Well, that's the subliminal advertising, isn't it, Martin Lindstrom?
Yes, it certainly mm-hmm. is, and you're absolutely right. What mm-hmm. was so surprising about that book was it didn't really have a lot of science behind it, but a lot of the claims he came with, and which was so disturbing for the whole world, I would claim, even I, and I'm from Northern Europe, actually read about it in school. Well, what was so surprising was he was right in most of the cases. And today, when we have the science, we can actually see it really does work. Those subconscious signals really drives us. And it drives us because when we're not aware of things going on, our guards are down. We actually feel we're making the decision ourselves. And that is the reason why subliminal advertising is so incredibly powerful today.
Yeah. And with only a minute to go, Martin Lindstrom, what do you expect advertisers are going to do with your research results? What are we going to see more or hear more or smell more?
Well, I think we certainly are going to see a lot of our senses being activated in a very dramatic way. So you will see that smell will be more prominent in the supermarket. You also notice that sound will be much more prominent on websites and in the stores around the world. But not only that, you'll also most likely see that the logo will start to disappear, because we've learned that the logo, in fact, has, in many cases, the opposite effect. When we see a logo, it's like a warning disclaimer. When people instead are being affected by the subconscious signals, like just a color, or like a shape, or like a picture style, or sound, or smell, we actually make up our mind much more dramatically. So brands are going to change the shift from a focus on logos to have indirect signals instead, making it become much more powerful.
Very,
so you see a lot of changes happening out there.
Very interesting stuff. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure.
Martin Lindstrom is the author of Buyology, Buyology, The Truth and Lies About What We Buy. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour. Thanks to Bill Martins and Rob Ferret for on-air production and direction. This is the Ideas Network.